broadcasting live from the White House of Talk. This is Tom McConnell.
Six minutes after 11 o'clock, this is News Talk 610 CKTB. Back on the program, one of our favorites, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. How's the weather down in London?
It's actually beautiful out right now.
Yeah, gorgeous day, isn't it, today?
Very nice.
Two things we want to talk about that I think is really interesting. Fat and coffee. Mm-hmm. All right, fat and coffee. So we'll get to coffee in a bit. But first, this idea that fat is so bad for us. Oh, my gosh. You know, fat. And remember the book. And you told me about the book when we first started talking to each other a couple years ago, and how you were so against the book Skinny Bitch. And you're like, oh, my God, that is the wrong way to go about life. You may fit into a size zero jeans, but you are killing your brain. And as well, it turns out, especially as we get older, that the skinnier you are doesn't mean the healthier you are. That there's fascinating new research that shows mortality begins to shift along the BMI curve with increasing age. That even at, if I look at 20-year-olds, there is actually zero lower mortality from about 25 on the BMI to 15. That whatever body shape you are at that age, it doesn't matter. But there's a significant change. That 26 or 27 looks to be ideal. As you go and get less weight as you get older, it's more likely you'll die. But as well, as you get heavier, however, heavier or skinnier is worse than heavier.
That's right.
Yeah.
Some of this research was actually initially done in Canada, and it showed that if you have a BMI of 25 to approximately 30, that you're going to be healthier and therefore, you know, live longer than people who have a lower BMI. So this is quite controversial, of course, because so many people are striving to be thin or skinny, when indeed just to be a little bit overweight is actually healthier. So it's fine to have some curves on you. I'm not suggesting obesity is okay. That's not what we're saying.
And that's not what the study suggests. However, and let's go over, BMI stands for body mass index. Mm-hmm. And so how is BMI calculated?
Oh, that's very, very complicated. You know, if you go to the gym, Tom, and they start testing with calipers and, you know, that kind of thing, it's a very complicated test that can be done. But what it means as a bottom line is that if you have a BMI of 25 to 30, you might be about 15, 20 pounds overweight.
Okay.
It really depends on your height and so on. So
okay, but you could calculate BMI. There are graphs and charts available, right?
Yeah, you can have somebody calculate it for you.
Aren't there graphs or charts that all you'd have to know is your height and weight?
I think you have to use calipers, unless they've got more up-to-date technology that I don't know about. But I know years and years ago, I remember doing a BMI test. So maybe what I'm maybe remembering could be antiquated by now. I don't know.
Okay, well, I just here now you can do it. You can just enter. I just don't know how they came up with the number, but here they're like, oh yeah, just put in your height and your weight and we can tell you your BMI. So you can easily figure it out, but you know, the goal is to obviously you'd have a lower BMI the less you weigh. That as you go down in pounds, your BMI goes down. As you go up in pounds, your BMI goes up. But I find it fascinating that lower is not healthier.
That's right. And a lot of people, what they're trying to do today is have as lean a body mass as possible, you see. And I think that this study also suggests, of course, that that's just not a healthy goal to try and obtain. You see, when you know, these people who are so cut and chiseled looking, you know, that they don't have any sort of, you know, curves in terms of a little extra flab on their body. You know, that somehow that has been wrongly demonized, because this study is suggesting that having a little bit of flab is actually healthier than having no flab, you know, or little flab on the body. So what I look at when I see this study is that I see how people interpret it. And, of course, some industries are going to be threatened by this kind of research. In fact, the article that I sent you from that was published in Nature magazine, you know, there's some definite people who are very angry about this study, because, of course, it's going to step on a lot of toes if people realize that going to the gym and doing fad dieting has been detrimental to their health, which in many, many cases, it has been detrimental to their health.
Yeah. And I mean, and there are some interesting things that obviously if you're near death, or if you've been in poor condition, your BMI will be very low to begin with. You know, my mother, when she died, was probably, I don't know, 110 pounds, which was nowhere near what she was, but she died as a result of cancer. She was 80 years old. I mean, but they've taken factors like that out. And they've also said, well, smokers are usually lean. And it's like, no, we've taken that out. Mm-hmm. You know, we've accounted for this, you know, because mm-hmm. there's reasons why some people are skinny that are unhealthy, such as mm-hmm. smoking. You know, that's one. But I think they've taken it out in this. And then they look at and they realize, you know what? Being a little heavier is it just that in a period of, and I don't know what your theory is, but in a period of crisis, for instance, your body needs a few more calories to draw on.
I think one of the implications of this study is that and you and I talk about this quite a bit, is that I'm really concerned that people are going to try and achieve this goal of being skinny or thin.
Yeah.
And to do that, they're going to follow a fad diet. And that's what I try and deter people from doing. I want people to eat a 3-square meal model, because if we look back before World War II, Tom, when we didn't suffer with fat or cholesterol phobia, and in this case, I'm talking about the foods, you know, the dietary fat, dietary cholesterol, we didn't suffer with these food phobias before World War II. And back then, we didn't see this obesity epidemic happening. So we know we did something right before World War II, and that's what I want people to return to. You know, back then, we wouldn't have seen too many fad diets happening either. The fad dieting has really been a very prevalent thing since more so the post-World War II era. We saw some fad dieting, you know, in the early 1900s, and even possibly even in the 1800s, but really the fad diets have taken off more recently in history, and we see that these fad diets, because they have no historical precedence, really aren't working for us as a society.
I got a question for you, Pam, but mm-hmm. I'm going to ask, Michael and Brampton, you got a question for Pam?
Yes, I have a question.
Hold on a second. Oh, my God. I just hung up on Pam. Can you hold on?
Yes.
Oh, we are a disaster here today. All right, Pam will call back. Let's take a break. See what happens when you don't do the phones there, David? When you leave it up to the intern and me? That was not your fault. That was totally my fault. Are we drunk today? What happened? Are we hungover? I don't think so.
Half-assed Wednesday.
Half-assed Wednesday! Oh, we are definitely... I'm quarter-assing it today. 15 minutes after 11 o'clock, more with Pam Killeen when she gets back. And this fascinating study that shows, especially as you get older, being slightly heavier is actually healthier. Having a BMI, 25, 26, slightly heavier. Officially, and I just looked this up, BMI is your height over, pardon me, your weight divided by your height squared. I don't know how they came up with it, but it's a general indicator of body shape, okay? General indicator of body shape. However, it doesn't distinguish between if you're a fat person or just a muscular person. It doesn't account for percentage body fat or lean mass composition, but it's not a bad start because there are problems with measuring your body fat composition anyways. However, BMI is simply weight divided by height squared. Anyway, we'll come back, talk about this a little more. 11:16, Michael has a question, and we'll be back with Pam Killeen next on 610 CKTV. 21 minutes after 11 o'clock. Pamela, I apologize. We are terrible on our end in terms, that was me. I totally forgot to lock you in before I picked up the caller. But luckily, we went away to break. All right. Michael in Brampton, how are you?
Yes, good morning.
You got a question for Pam?
Yes, I have a question for Pam. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning.
I'm a person who likes to eat sauerkraut. And in the morning, I will have 2 slices of 12-grain bread and with a little bit of mayonnaise and spread it over with sauerkraut. So I'm wondering if there's a harm in eating too much sauerkraut.
When I work with clients, I ask them to eat about 2 tablespoons of sauerkraut per meal, because so many of my clients have digestive issues. So even at breakfast, they need to have something like sauerkraut in their diet. But you certainly, yeah, I think you can overdo it, sure. But the trick is that when you start eating sauerkraut, whether it's 2 tablespoons or less or more for that matter, it can cause some digestive distress, because when you're taking in something that is encouraging the growth of friendly flora in your gut, this can start creating a war. So it can cause things like bloating or gas or diarrhea or something like that. Mm-hmm. But with breakfast, you know, where you're talking about sauerkraut, if you look at traditional cultures, they ate the sauerkraut with meats. So make sure you're eating things like eggs and sausage for breakfast, because it sounds like you're eating way too many carbs for breakfast.
Yeah, I don't know. I just have it just with the bread, and that's it. I normally don't put anything else on it.
For breakfast, one of the best ways to start off your morning is more so with things like eggs and bacon or sausage.
Okay.
Because you want to stabilize your blood sugar.
I'll have a bowl of cereal and that, and sometimes one egg. So.
Mm-hmm. The egg is the most nutrient dense of the foods that you just mentioned. So if you can have like two or three eggs, maybe some sausage or bacon, that would be a better way to start off your morning, simply because the animal fat and protein is what's going to stabilize your blood sugar and help you keep your blood sugar stable for the rest of the day. When you eat too many carbs at breakfast, this starts to destabilize your blood sugar, and it can set you up for disaster over the course of the day.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Well, at least he's eating sauerkraut, though.
Yeah, no, that's great news. And where sauerkraut is concerned, also keep in mind there are other lacto-fermented foods that are extremely healthy that you can make in your own kitchen, and that would include things like beet kvass. Right now, at this time of the year, you know, with more and more vegetation surfacing, you want to make things like lacto-fermented pickles as well. It would be very, very healthy for your digestion.
And we had friends who make their own kefir.
Fantastic.
And so for those who are unaware, what is kefir, and how would you make your or prepare your own?
Well, kefir, you can buy a culture to make your own kefir, or you can buy kefir grains. And so essentially what you want to do is you need to add some sort of culture to the, hopefully you can get farm fresh raw milk. And if you can get farm fresh raw milk, that's the gold standard in terms of producing your own kefir in your kitchen. But you're basically going to sit it on your kitchen counter and let it ferment for a couple of days, and then you put it in the fridge. And that is just like having a yogurt almost. Kefir is very similar to yogurt. Yogurt tends to be a little bit thicker. There's some differences in terms of the strains of bacteria or yeast that are in the kefir, but it's very, very medicinal for the immune system, which, of course, 70 or 80% of your immune system is the actual lining of your gut. So you want to encourage the friendly organisms in your gut as much as possible, hence the importance of these lacto-fermented foods.
Now, final topic we want to get to is coffee. You said there's been two interesting coffee stories this week. You sent me one about coffee drinkers beware, your caffeine habit could induce a temporary mental disorder. And I sent you one back that, and we go on to life expectancy, that moderate coffee consumption could actually, it seems that people who have a moderate amount of coffee seem to live longer.
Yeah.
So I guess I would just
caution people on that study, simply because I'm not against the consumption of things like coffee, wine, or chocolate. And we see more and more studies surfacing, you know, saying that these are healthy foods or substances. And I'm not being puritanical here. I think people can have a cup of coffee, can have a glass of wine, can have some chocolate. But the trick is that are you crossing the line in the sand, and are you abusing these substances? Are you dependent upon these substances?
How do I determine if I have a caffeine addiction, and what does that do to my body?
Mm-hmm. Okay, great question. Don't let me forget to answer the second part. But when you are addicted to coffee, it's sort of, you know, you have to ask yourself, can you get through the day without it? If you can't get through the day without it, then there's a problem, okay? The other thing you have to ask yourself is the morning after you have coffee the day before, are you waking up groggy? Because when you wake up groggy, if you're a coffee drinker, then that's a sign of withdrawal, which shows that there's some sort of, that you're addicted to it. Mm-hmm. The other thing you have to watch for if you're a coffee drinker is you have to watch and see if you have things like depression, fatigue, anxiety, insomnia, brain fog. There's a book by Michael Chernisky, and it's called Caffeine Blues. And there's a lot of research to show that coffee or caffeine in general is associated with, mood issues. So you have to be very, very careful on if you are drinking coffee, is it a dependency? Is it triggering mood issues? Is it interfering with your sleep? You know, you have to be very judicious when you're dealing with any kind of stimulant like this. I'm not trying to take the fun out of everybody's life, but I think we're today in society, we've crossed the line in the sand in terms of how much coffee we're drinking. If you look at the history of coffee, when we started consuming it in the Western world in the, say, the 1700s, we had our coffee joints that we used to hang out at, and we would have a little tiny tass of coffee, right? We didn't drink a lot when we started consuming coffee. And now today, of course, you see these, 20-ounce or more cups of coffee that people are consuming. And this is going to have a devastating effect in terms of not just what it will do for your mood, but how it can deplete the body of nutrients. So the second part of your question, Tom, is that what coffee can do is actually deplete your body of minerals, of B vitamins, of vitamin C. So again, there's that issue as well in terms of the long-term effects if you are abusing this substance in particular.
Is there Coffee Anonymous anywhere? Caffeine Anonymous? Maybe that's the next thing, though. Maybe that's the next. Although to detox from coffee or to break away from coffee, apparently people have done it. It's hell for a couple of days, and then most people are like, yeah, you know what, I actually feel great. And most people, once they do detox, it takes a day or two because your body is so dependent on the caffeine. But once they do, they feel great about it.
Yeah, it's very depleting of your energy. It gives you a wired and tired feeling at the same time. It's not a real sense of energy. And so if you're dependent on coffee, that's a sure sign your adrenals are weak. And there are lots of healthier ways to support your adrenal glands than to turn to coffee. One of the things you can do to support your adrenal glands, of course, is to make sure you're getting enough animal fat in the diet.
Pam, always a pleasure. Enjoy this glorious day.
Thanks, Tom. You too. Take care.
28 minutes after 11 o'clock, that's Pam Colleen. If you want more information and to check out Pam's website, pamcolleen.com, pamkilleen.com, pamcolleen.com. When we come back, Quebec Soccer Federation